Good afternoon. Welcome to episode 17 of the Warrior Soul Podcast. I'm your host, and my name is Chris Albert. And today, we're going to be talking about entrepreneurship. There are thousands of veteran business owners in the country today. And we often hear about how bad times are, how awful times are, how, you know, the country is on a downward turn. But in a lot of ways, the reality is that there's never been a better time in the history of this country or this world to open up your own business. And the reason is because of accessibility, because you have access to ideas, which are almost more important than money when you're trying to open up a business. And the other part of that is that through technology, you can open up a business with a lot less capital than once was necessary. So for my guest today, I have Joe Crane from Veteran on the Move. And Joe is a retired Marine Corps officer who started a podcast where he interviews entrepreneurs from the veteran community and entrepreneurs who have family members who are in the veteran community. And through his podcast, he is constantly delivering nuggets of information and little bits of gold that we can all take advantage of as we move forward in our own journeys. And so in the show notes, I'm going to give you the link to Joe's podcast, but I also want to encourage you to listen to his words here. There's a few different things he goes into that, I think that so many of us can benefit from, you know, like the fact that we might not all have mentors around us. We might not all have, you know, successful people surrounding us, but you can get the ideas of those successful people through podcasts, through books, through audiobooks, and through so many different resources that are available to you right now. So for those of you out there who are considering going on your own entrepreneurial journeys, no, it's not going to be easy, but it is worth it and it is doable. So without further ado, I give you my interview with Joe Crane from Veteran on the Move. Joe, tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us where you came from, you know, what you did in the military and what happened when you started to get out.
All right, you bet, Chris. Thanks for having me on your show. I really appreciate it. It's kind of different for me being on the other side of the interview because I'm obviously usually the one doing the interview. So, going back, I'd always kind of been an entrepreneur at heart, you know, even growing up as a young kid. I think back then we called them inventors. Mm-hmm. I was always intrigued by inventing the new latest mechanical gadget kind of thing, although I never really did anything with it. You know, I just didn't have the skill sets or the wherewithal to really pull anything off. But I always was coming up with different ways of doing things and better ways of doing things. I've always kind of had that natural knack for that entrepreneurial urge. About a year or so into college as a young guy, I got interested in military aviation. And I looked around a lot of different programs. I ended up going into the Marine Corps Platoon Leaders Class program, PLC, with an air contract. When I graduated college, I got a commission and had an air contract and went off to the basic school, went to flight school, became a Cobra pilot. Spent about 8 years on active duty, spent about 3 years in the reserve, still flying. I became flying Cobra attack helicopters. Mm-hmm. And after September 11th, I got furloughed from my airline job and I was in the reserves actively flying. So long story short, I ended up going back on active duty as an active reserve Cobra pilot. Did a couple of combat flying tours to Iraq, flying Cobras. And eventually, after 24 years of being a Marine, retired. And as I got close to retiring, I knew I was probably going to go back and do the airline thing because I still had my airline job after all this. And as I was getting close to retirement, I'm like, you know, I really want to do this entrepreneurial thing. I didn't really know what it would be or what the business would be. But I just had this burning desire to be an entrepreneur and run my own business. And so I was a couple of years out from retirement, and I thought, you know, I don't really have an idea right now. I can flounder and look around and, you know, for the next couple of years until I retire. And I was actually one of the Marines on the staff, you know, as a deputy director or, you know, XO, if you will, up at Fort Leavenworth in Kansas as the at the Army's Command General Staff College. So I was a Marine on the staff. I taught the Marine Capabilities class to all the Army, other service and foreign officers there a few times a year. And just basically dealt with, you know, the 30, 40 Marine officers that went through the course each year. So I was in an academic environment, no duty, no weekends, no deployments, very little travel. We traveled to some of the outstations and taught classes, but I pretty much had a 9-to-5 job for like the first time in my life. So, I was like, it's a good time to go to school. And the tuition assistance was available. I'd never gotten an advanced degree, graduate degree or anything like that. There was just too much busyness and chaos through most of my Marine Corps career to ever really think I could pull it off. This was the time. So I thought, you know, if I'm going to go back to school, I'm going to do something that I am really interested in. I'm not going to go get the MBA just so it looks good on a resume, so I go get the JOB, because I knew I already had a JOB. That was the airline job. Mm-hmm. What I wanted to do was, I was leaning towards some computer stuff, computer coding, computer programming, because I come from, like, old school. I was like doing basic Pascal and Fortran back when I was younger, which are long gone. But then I thought, you know what? I started looking around and I realized, wait, I could get it. I started seeing these entrepreneurship programs at colleges and universities. I'm like, you can get a degree in entrepreneurship? I had no idea. Mm-hmm. So I jumped in and got a master's in entrepreneurship from Oklahoma State. And one of the final classes I had to develop a business plan for a business that I wanted to do. So I'd come to this idea, you know, and getting a degree in entrepreneurship is not necessarily the best way to jump into becoming an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. If you want to jump right in, that's probably not the way to go. If you want to explore the realm of entrepreneurship and you know, if you don't have something better to study at school, I'd highly recommend it, because you get all the raw accounting and finance skills and everything and all this stuff that you don't really want to have to do, but it's good to know. But you're around entrepreneurial-minded people. You know, the professors are entrepreneurial-minded, business-minded, and I thrived in that environment. I was finally surrounded by people that thought like I did. And it was just very invigorating, and ideas were just starting to flow and percolate, and sparks were flying around in my brain. It was a great time, because I just had lots of ideas, and I was invigorated and ready to go, looking forward to my transition so that I could do some entrepreneurial stuff full time.
And what was your first entrepreneurial experience?
Well, what I did was I came up with this idea. You know, the Iraq War was still going hot and heavy at the time, and Afghanistan was hot. And I was driving down the road one day, and my dad called me, and he goes, and my dad's in his 80s now, and he's always been this great Rotary. He's been a Rotarian his whole life. Mm-hmm. He's like on a 20-some year streak of never missing a weekly Rotary Club meeting.
That's awesome.
And every week they have a speaker. He called me one day to tell me about this kid named Josh Bleel from the Indianapolis area where my dad lives, who lost his legs in Iraq. And this kid came to his Rotary Club in Indianapolis and spoke. And my dad was so moved by the kid's story that my dad had to call me the next day and tell me about it. Plus, Josh was a Marine also, and I'm a Marine. And, you know, in his whole life, you know, my dad's never called me to tell me about a speaker at the Rotary Club. And, you know, 20-some years of never missing a meeting every week, he's seen a lot of speakers. But this kid moved him so much. And I was thinking, you know, that is a great story, Dad. But I'm thinking, but why is, you know, your son's a Marine. I see this stuff all the time. I know about this stuff all the time. I hear about it all the time. Why is this my dad's first experience with it? And then the light bulb came on. I'm like, wow, there needs to be you know, there's a lot of people out there. You know, we're those of us that serve in the military are, you know, less than 1%ers, right? Mm-hmm. We think there's a lot of people in the military, but the reality is there isn't,
right,
compared to the rest of the population. So there are a lot of civilian pukes, if you will, that never experience anybody in the military, or especially, you know, especially wounded warrior types. A lot of people don't even know one, as many as there are out there right now. I thought there needs to be something to connect people, to connect these wounded warriors with their communities and to connect the communities with their wounded warriors, you know, their heroes. And so I came up with this idea, kind of like what Josh Bleel was doing. The Indianapolis Colts kind of took him under their wing, gave him a job, made him community spokesperson. He's got a book deal. I'm like, man, that's awesome. But, you know, for every Josh Bleel, there's 1,000 other guys out there just like Josh that don't have the Indianapolis Colts. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I want to create an organization that helps these guys become public speakers, tell their story, turns them into a public speaker, and maybe even gets them to the point where they can make a living at it. Or wounded warrior types, you know, making a living speaking. And the name just came to me, Speaking of Heroes. And so I started this nonprofit called Speaking of Heroes while I was still on active duty, while I was still getting my degree in entrepreneurship. And I went through the business plan process. Oklahoma State was having a business plan competition. And so I had to go down to Oklahoma because I was doing my degree mostly online. I had to go down to Oklahoma to compete in person at this business plan competition. It was just me putting this business plan together. I competed against 90 teams. You know, I was like the old guy, of course, mm-hmm. All these other young college kids. And some of them had, you know, multiple members on their teams. And out of 90 teams, I came in, I placed third.
Oh, wow.
in the business plan competition. And I won $5,000, you know, to apply towards the nonprofit. And so it was a great experience, and I was just like on fire, you know, I was all fired up and ready to go. You know, the truth of it is, since I've actually retired and I've had to go back to working for the airline, and, you know, my wife and I have 14 years, I've been so busy, I haven't really gotten very far with Speaking of Heroes, but that was my first experience with the whole entrepreneurial process. And so I've got kind of like this canned business, this canned product, a nonprofit, all sitting there, all ready to go, but I haven't really been able to do anything with it. I felt like I kind of came out on the other side of the entrepreneur process, saying, "Wow, I did it! You know, I did it! I stood up a nonprofit, I won, and, you know, placed third in a business plan competition. I felt like I'd actually, you know, was valid at that point." Mm. And I started thinking about it. I'm like, you know, looking back on this process I had to go through to do all this stuff, and I'm like, I discovered all these great people, programs, and resources for people that want to start businesses, for people that want to become entrepreneurs, and a lot of them are veteran-specific, with all these veteran programs to help veterans transition to entrepreneurship. And I didn't know I knew this stuff was out there, but I really didn't know about it. And as I went through the process of starting this nonprofit, I discovered all this great stuff. And I thought to myself, you know, if I didn't know about it, and I'm that into entrepreneurship, I bet you most veterans don't know about it. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, you know, at one point, it was another proverbial light bulb moment. I heard an interview-based podcast going one day, and I'm like, huh. And I'd always listened to podcasts. I always loved podcasts. And for a long time, I thought I'd kind of like to start my own podcast. But the limiting factor was, I don't think there's enough content inside of Joe Crane, you know, to talk about one subject, you know, once a week or once a month to start my own podcast. That's kind of what held me back. And then I heard this interview-based podcast, and I'm like, that's it. I can interview people, the experts that know about entrepreneurship. And I focus mostly on interviewing veterans that have become entrepreneurs. I also have other people that either have resources or run a program, university professors, patent attorneys, that kind of thing. So I interview all these people that are directly pertinent to helping a veteran transition to entrepreneurship. So I came up with this idea. I'm going to start a podcast. I'm going to interview all the people, programs, and resources to help veterans transition to entrepreneurship. And ultimately, we came up with the name Veteran on the Move. You know, Oscar Mike, because those are one of my favorite military terms. Mm-hmm. So So there you have the podcast, and just completed, let's see. We did an interview with you, Chris, right before this, and, mm-hmm. and you were episode number 126.
Oh, wow. So, that's awesome. So
I've done 126 interviews on the Veteran on the Move podcast. And, you know, one of the things you had mentioned before we hit the record button was you're fascinated with people that collect people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd love – that's another great quote. I love that. I'm writing that one down. That's something I never realized would be a byproduct of having an interview-based podcast. Because you're exactly right. I've got – the first episode is just me talking. So I guess it's, you know, 125 interviews. But I have 125 people that I've interviewed that I have – in some of these people, to this day, I have a very close business relationship with them. And there's even a couple of them that I've gone into business with. Like there was Matt Miller from School Spirit Vending. I love the business concept so much that my wife and I went into business with him. So we have our own School Spirit Vending business.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. You know,
and I got another guy I interviewed that I kept in touch with, and he started getting into the whole Amazon private labeling. And so we're doing an Amazon private label business also. So there's all these, you know, great, you know, you ever heard the saying, beware of unintended consequences? This is like what, you know, several good unintended consequences of running a podcast and interviewing people. So that's probably been the greatest benefit of running a podcast is the people that I've been able to collect. I had no idea that that was going to be a benefit.
I think, you know, hearing your story, you know, going through as a Marine Corps officer and then coming out and, you know, having that inner desire to want to become an entrepreneur. You know, I think there's a lot of people out there who want to pursue their own entrepreneurial dreams, who want to start a business of some sort. And some of them do it, some of them don't. In your experience, what do you think it is that keeps people from doing it? What do you think it is that keeps people from pulling the trigger on their dreams?
That's a tough one. I think there is a common theme of, you know, there's several different kinds of people out there, of course. I've always called myself an entrepreneur wannabe,
mm-hmm.
Because I was so tied up and consumed with my Marine Corps career, but the whole time it was just bugging me. I think, you know, in my bio on the Veteran on the Move website, I confess in there that instead of reading the, you know, the tactics manual and the NATOPS manual for my aircraft, yeah. You know, I didn't spend all my time doing that. I secretly was reading business magazines and Entrepreneur magazine and financial stuff. I was always just interested and fascinated in business and how business works. And if I ever ran across somebody that ran their own business, I was always asking them questions and details. Just, you know, how do you make money? How did you get started? That kind of thing. So running this podcast has really become, it comes so naturally to me because I have a natural curiosity about how someone runs their business and how they got started. Mm-hmm. So the kind of person that becomes an entrepreneur or the kind of person that wants to become an entrepreneur but never does, I really think it's a matter of if somebody really wants to, you know, deep down inside it's something they really want to do, but they never actually pull the trigger. I really think it's a matter of they never got around the right people. They never hung around the right types of people that could show them the way, that could explain it to them, that could give them the confidence to give it a try.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes, you know, in the military, like, you know, when I was in the Marine Corps, there are a few people here and there that I could talk business and entrepreneurship with, fellow Marines. But for the most part, it's frowned upon to talk business and making money on the side, because if you're thinking about something else besides the Marine Corps, well, then you're not all in.
Yep.
And you know, and there's some validity to that. I mean, there's no doubt. There's things in the military in general, in the Marine Corps, they pretty much take everything you've got. Mm-hmm. And if you're not giving it 100% or 110%, then you might only be putting yourself in danger, but putting other people in danger, because it is serious business. So there are times where you have to shelf other parts of your life and those kinds of dreams and ideas. But they're also, that's the best part about a military career, where you know you're in the fleet, you're on the frontline units, deploying units, and then you're in the schoolhouse, and then you're back in the fleet, and then you're back in a B billet. You know, so there are times where we can have things, have some time to reflect and think about starting our own business. And if you're getting, however long you've been in, if you're getting close to getting out, and you think this is something you want to look at or do, you owe it to yourself to start at least a couple years in advance if you have that luxury, because it is going to take a while to get your faculties in order and start coming up with ideas and doing your research. And even if you have an idea and you're ready to go, it may take a couple years before you get to the point of even coming close to being profitable. So yeah, I mean, to answer your question, I really think it's a matter of people not, you know, it being honest with themselves and admitting that that's their true dream, mm-hmm. and getting around the right people and the resources to open their eyes to make them realize it can actually happen.
Absolutely. You know, I was talking to a Marine friend of mine a few years ago, and he was having a lot of issues and you know, not just business wise, but also emotionally. And one of the things he said to me was, you know, I never planned to live past the age of 24. And in a lot of ways, I don't think everybody, all of us do this. And I don't think that Marines in general are like this. But I think subconsciously, a lot of us don't plan on what we're going to do after the age of 24. We think, you know, we're going to go into the military, we're going to come out, and we're either going to go to school or we're going to get a job, but we don't really plan for what life is actually going to be like on a day-to-day basis after that. Because I think that's what sneaks up on you. It's not the idea of what you're going to do. It's the idea of what your day is going to be like on a day-to-day basis once you get out. And I wrote an article about this a few weeks ago where I said, you know, the most freedom I ever had in my life was when I was in the Marine Corps. And when you think about it, it's like this, it's, you know, when you might think, oh, I have to stay on duty tonight, or, oh, we're going out to the field next week, or, oh, this or that, but you don't have to really worry about bills. You don't have to worry about streams of income or anything like that. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got chow in front of you. You don't have to worry about where you're going to live, what you're going to wear each day. Your mind is really forced to be present and forced to be on what you're doing. And, you know, I think that for those guys who are in, you know, exactly like you said, one of the biggest things you can do for yourselves is when you have your downtime, when you're trying to figure out what you're going to do with the rest of the day, when you're not out in the field or you're not doing something else, you know, the biggest thing you can do is invest in yourself and invest in getting smarter and being prepared.
Absolutely. I mean, Chris, you hit on several things, and I've got a couple of things I wanted to make a comment about. Many, many years ago when I was a young lieutenant, I think it was our flight surgeon that mentioned this new study that had come out. And I think it was the average retired Marine, and I think it was somebody that spent a 30-year career. I don't think it was like retired at 20, but the average retired Marine that spends 30 years in the Marine Corps only lived 10 years after retirement. Mm-hmm. And we're all scratching our heads like, what? What the? And I didn't recognize what the issue was at that time. But years later, I heard of another story back when they were doing the Apollo missions, when they were going into outer space and, you know, first, you know, the moon missions, first guy on the moon, Neil Armstrong and all that. they were discovering that the astronauts that had come back from their Apollo mission, you know, it's kind of like you get your turn. There were a couple of guys that got to go maybe more than once, but you know, this pool of astronauts, and it was just by luck that, you know, Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong were the ones that happened to get the moon landing. But all of them were going in outer space. It was a great time in history. You know, they're astronauts, they're American heroes. They'd come back from their Apollo mission, and all these astronauts were experiencing severe depression.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't figure out why. And they brought in psychologists and everything, and they're like, oh, yeah, I know what the problem is. These astronauts, their whole lives, since they're little kids, had this dream of going in outer space.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day they do it, and then they come back to Earth. Now what are they supposed to do? They never thought past what they were supposed to do after they achieved their lifelong dream, going into outer space. I was like, that just fascinated me. And to this day, and actually what they ended up doing was they worked into the Apollo astronaut program, you must come up with plans for what you're going to do after you get back from your outer space mission. And once they forced the astronauts to come up with their after outer space plan, the serious depression problems went away. Because as soon as they got back, they knew what they were supposed to go to next. So they jumped on it.
Wow. That is a gem of knowledge right there. I mean,
and, you know, you talk about the veteran suicide rate and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Without a doubt, and I'm no psychologist, but, you know, I'm a Marine veteran, and I know lots of, you know, from my own experiences and all my comrade in arms, I guarantee you the number one issue in veteran problems these days is veterans have lost their sense of purpose, which means, you know, maybe since you were a kid, you want to grow up and join the Army or become a Marine or a Navy SEAL, whatever. But when it's over, no one ever thought past that. And that's just like the guy you were talking about. He never thought past age 24 or 25. Well, now what do I do? And that's a huge problem with veterans these days. I think that's a big problem with when guys get out or they come back from a combat deployment and then they get out, they're geographically and emotionally detached from all this great excitement and all their buddies and everything else. And now they're like, okay, now what am I supposed to do? And they never thought past it. And we all fall victim to it. It's so easy to fall into. But if you're aware that that's the problem, there's things you can do to alleviate it, much like the Apollo astronauts did, where they came up with a plan ahead of time.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, one of the things I've really been thinking about over the last few months is, you know, when you're in the military, a lot of times, you know, your adventure is presented to you. You know, it almost comes to you on, I don't want to say it like a silver platter, but it comes to you on a silver platter. It comes to you in the form of, you know, where are they going to send me? What are we going to be doing for the next 6 months? What are we going to be doing for the next year? And it's kind of mapped out for you. I think a lot of times, you know, I went down to the VA last week and, you know, you look around and a lot of the guys are sitting there, but they have their kind of routine set. They get to the VA, they pack their lunch, they're sitting there and they're waiting. And I think that in a lot of ways, we get conditioned to wait. You know, we get conditioned to be told. And it's not, I hate when people say that people in the military are robots. They're not. They're decision makers. They're leaders. They're. But it's almost like, for example, if somebody's going to school right now, rather than taking the opportunity and getting the books on their own and learning everything on their own, they're waiting for the teachers to give them their syllabuses, their syllabi. I'm sorry for the English sticklers out there. Their syllabi. They're waiting for people to waiting for the teachers to give them their assignments. I think it's an overall phenomenon that I think is hit especially hard on veterans, because in life, you know, your adventures, you have to seek your adventures. You have to go out there and actively find what you're going to do.
That's so true. And I, you know, Chris, from my own experience, I was looking forward to going back to my airline job because I knew I could make enough money, you know, with retirement to, you know, to take care of my family. But I would have large chunks of time off to work my entrepreneurial ventures on the side, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I was like really motivated, looking forward to this. And so, you know, the Veteran on the Move podcast is one of those successes that's happened, you know, two and a half years later. It's still going. It's been a success. But what I found was, like, I think most of us can relate to this. You talked about our schedules are determined for us. The deployments are scheduled for us, and we just kind of fall in around and fill in the details behind the big master plan, the big blue arrow, you know?
Yeah.
But when you get out or you retire, whatever it may be, all of a sudden that big blue arrow, that big training plan is no longer there anymore. Mm-hmm. So you like wake up in the morning and sometimes you're like, okay, well, what am I supposed to do today? Mm-hmm. Well, I'll go for a run, you know, I'm going to go to the gym. Okay. What are you gonna do after that? Well, I guess I'll eat lunch. You know, and if you're not careful, all of a sudden months, years can go by and you've accomplished nothing.
Right.
Because you haven't set down a clearly, if you haven't set out a clearly defined plan, a list of goals, things you're actually going to accomplish, your time can just get away from you. And before you know it, you're years down the road and 30 pounds heavier and you're not working out. Mm-hmm. I mean, or whatever your poison may be, you know, idleness can be the death of you, literally. And all of a sudden you spin it into depression or something because you're sitting around with no purpose, nothing to do. Well, you know what? You're out of the military now. You need to come up with your own purpose. You have to come up with your purpose. No one else can really do it for you.
Absolutely.
And you got to get around other people that are purpose-minded and not just people that flounder. I mean, if you've been in the military, you know what it's like to have a purpose in life. If you come back into the civilian world and now you're around, don't get me wrong, man, there's great civilians, but let's face it, most of our society, they're literally the walking dead. It's just a bunch of zombies walking through life with no purpose, just following, you know, the latest thing on Facebook or what they saw on TV. But the people that are becoming successful, the people that are making money, the people that are making things happen, those are people with a plan, and they came up with the plan themselves. And if you're working at a job, the J-O-B, you're working somebody else's plan. If you want to become an entrepreneur, you're going to work your own plan, but you have to actually have a plan for it to ever work.
Absolutely, man. You know, I have this quote, and I've put it on Instagram a few different times, but, you know, everybody talks about how they're scared of failure and how failure is this super scary thing. But when you really think about it, failure actually isn't scary. Failure looks like your couch. It looks like your snooze button on your alarm clock. It looks like your TV set or your Xbox or your Pokemon Go or whatever that is. Whatever it is that's taking you away from your real mission or what you want to do in this life, that's what failure looks like. And people are not scared of it. They're attracted to it like moths to a light bulb, because it's success that's actually uncomfortable. You actually have to get out uncomfortable, put yourself out there, put your dreams on the line, put the possibility that those dreams are going to fail, you know, and that's a really uncomfortable thing. And so I really identify with some of the things you were saying there. And, you know, I'd like to add that a lot of times you don't realize that you've fallen into complacency and that you've fallen into the path of the walking dead. And it's because everybody around you is doing the same thing. Everybody around you is acting the same way. And so you fall into those patterns. And so what you said about finding the right people to be around, finding the cream of the crop, or you know, your five people that are going to push you. That's so important. And that's one of the first things you need to do, in my opinion, when you get out, is to identify the people that you want to be around, because you are the average of the five people that you hang around with.
Absolutely, Chris. Misery loves company. So, we've kind of been programmed this way to a certain extent in the military, because it's all about the team. There's no person sticks their head up too far above the crowd. It's all about the success of the team, the success of the unit. It's not about promoting yourself and trying to put yourself out there while you're in the military. So it's a little bit of a mindset change. But all the things you learn in the military, if you execute them in the civilian sector, you'll be successful. Nowhere else can you get the leadership type experience that you get while you're in the military.
Absolutely.
And we talk about like hard skills versus soft skills. Hard skills are like a certified public accounting degree, you're actually certified as a CPA, or you're a certified computer programmer, or you have a piece of paper or a document, or a degree in this or a degree in that. Those are hard skills. Soft skills are all the things that you have to deal with people, like leadership, team building, cooperation, all the Marine Corps leadership traits and principles. Those are soft skills. And that's why veterans not only make great employees, but they make great entrepreneurs, is because veterans have such good soft skills, because we've packed a massive amount of living into a short amount of time. I mean, if you've done a 6 month deployment on a ship, or if you've done a 12 month deployment to Iraq or Afghanistan, all the training you've been through, whatever you did in the military, that's a massive amount of living and a massive amount of soft skill education that you can't get anywhere else. And that's why companies love hiring veterans, because they make good employees. They show up to work on time. Nowadays, people don't even show up to work. I mean, showing up to work is like 80% of the battle for employers these days. They can't hire somebody that's just going to show up. I mean, can you believe that? I mean, if you just show up, you're like 80% better than the rest of the crowd.
Absolutely. As far as getting out of that funk, or, are there any daily routines that you have, Joe, that you feel have made you successful and that have helped you to kind of stay present and stay focused on your mission?
Well, I think personal development is very important, and depending on what your religious beliefs, religious convictions are. Most personal development programs today and the things that are said in really all come from the Bible, believe it or not. For some of us, especially when I was younger, the Bible was difficult for me to read or understand and interpret it. But personal development has always been a big part of my life for the last many, many years. And I really got into personal development by listening to podcasts in the beginning. And then ultimately I became a podcast host because I fell in love with podcasting. And so whatever you think you're interested in, that you think you might want to get involved in business-wise or entrepreneurship-wise, there's probably already a podcast about it. There's probably two or three podcasts about it. And so if you've got a drive to work or a commute or time during your day, whether it be in the morning or the evening, if you have time that you can listen to podcasts, and there's podcasts that are solely focused on personal development, and most of them are free. So I really owe a lot of my motivation and education in the business and entrepreneurial world to podcasts, all the different podcasts that I've listened to over the years, which kind of directed me into eventually hosting my own podcast. But I get so much out of listening to podcasts, and I listen to personal development podcasts, I listen to business podcasts, I listen to online business type podcasts all the time. And so if there's one thing I could point to that keeps me motivated, keeps me grounded, and keeps me coming back for more, it's listening to all the podcasts that I listen to.
Any specific ones that you'd recommend?
Yeah, I would. There's Entrepreneur on Fire with John Dumas. Yep. There's Smart Passive Income with Pat Flynn. Mm-hmm. There's Amy Porterfield has a great podcast on Facebook advertising, all about how to use Facebook to expand your business. Mm-hmm. Chris Ducker has a podcast. I think it's called the New Business. I just know it by Chris Ducker's podcast. The 4-Hour Workweek. I love that book. I read that book several years ago. Yeah. The 4-Hour Workweek. Tim Ferriss has his own podcast now, the author of 4-Hour Workweek. Mm-hmm. I think it's called The Tim Ferriss Show.
Tim Ferriss Show, yeah.
Yeah. And he talks about a lot of the principles of the 4-Hour Workweek there. Robert Kiyosaki, many, many years ago, my brother said, hey, you got to read this book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Yeah.
And I'm like, who, what? And I read that book. I'm like, that whole book just resonated with me. Mm-hmm. And Robert Kiyosaki has his own podcast now also. You can look him up. And actually, he was a Marine helicopter pilot in Vietnam, yep, too, so can definitely relate. Interesting about the Robert Kiyosaki thing, you know, he had the Rich Dad, Poor Dad, where his poor dad was his dad that spent his whole life becoming educated and getting degrees, had a doctorate degree, was head of the public school system in Hawaii, but he never had any money. So he spent all his time becoming educated and working in the public school system. Never had any money. That was Robert Kiyosaki's dad. His rich dad was his best friend's dad, mm-hmm, who was nothing but an entrepreneur. Not very well educated, but he ran his own businesses, restaurants, hotels, his whole life, and ended up, when he finally passed away, was one of the richest, wealthiest men in Hawaii. And everybody always used to give Robert Kiyosaki a hard time, saying, there was no rich dad, you made that up. Why don't you tell us who he was then? Well, it turns out that his family was very modest, and the family didn't want anything to do with people knowing who the real rich dad was. And on Robert's podcast a couple months ago, since the guy had actually passed away, the son, Robert's best buddy when he was growing up, agreed to reveal who it was. And so they did a podcast on, okay, this is who the real rich dad was, and they went through the whole story. It was really cool.
That's awesome.
To see that come out like almost 20 years later. You know?
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I one podcast that I love, and I'm actually good friends with the host, is London Real with Brian Rose. And I've taught a couple of entrepreneurial courses for Brian, but I got introduced to a lot of them, like Tim Ferriss and like Robert Kiyosaki and a couple of the other people. I got introduced to them through that one podcast. So that's one I'd recommend myself.
It's London Real, like as opposed to fake, like REAL.
Yeah. The way he started it was supposed to be like an MMA podcast where, you know, he was an investment banker and he went through kind of like a midlife crisis. He's American, but he lives in London. And, he was doing jiu-jitsu and he was exploring all these things. And, he started exploring like psychedelics and ayahuasca and things like that. But, at a certain point, He said, all right, what am I doing here? And he started really talking to different business owners. So he's had people like Gary Vaynerchuk on. He's had Alex and Mimi Icon, who are both like really big e-commerce people. And then he's had Tim Ferriss and a few others. So definitely a good one.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look that one up. That sounds cool.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that's kind of funny is I don't really have a commute to work anymore, like, you know, a morning drive to work every day, Monday through Friday, because my airline schedule is kind of, you know, erratic. Mm-hmm. So I've kind of fallen off on listening to some of my podcasts, and it's kind of funny to talk about this, but like podcasts, were for years have become like a main source of my daily motivation. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize it, but I got away from listening to all my podcasts, and I almost became lost. I didn't have direction anymore, and almost got like depressed because I'm like, what's good? And then I realized, I'm like, oh man, I don't listen to my podcast anymore, because the best time to listen to your podcast is when you're driving to work or driving home.
Absolutely.
And, on that commute. So I actually go out of my way to carve out time away from everything so I can still listen to my podcast. Because I really need that. I mean, it's almost like, you know, it's a requirement for me to get my daily motivation. And, you know, when you listen to this stuff, it's not like what happens is you're listening to the entrepreneurial, motivated, visionary type people all the time. It's not like I want to become Robert Kiyosaki or I want to become Tim Ferriss. I want to be like them or do exactly what they did. But what it does is it gives you hope and it gives you vision and it validates your dreams and it motivates you. It makes you feel good and it gets you what you need to actually execute on some of your ideas.
Well, it also extends your peer group. And just like what we were talking about before, you know, a lot of us, you know, right now I live an hour outside of 29 Palms. So I live in, you know, not near a lot of people right now.
Hoorah. Been there many times.
I actually ended up with a girl from 29 Palms, but I'll get into that on another day.
Every Marine's dream, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it was by surprise. It was by surprise. She ended up being a client of mine in Long Beach. And I said to her, you know, where are you from? And she's like, 29 Palms. And immediately I did the exorcist sign, like, get away from me. But, you know.
I've never known anybody that's from 29 Palms.
She is from 29 Palms. Her parents are both teachers out there. But she ended up, she was cute enough that I let that go. And I was like, all right, you know. but anyways, the idea is that you really want to surround yourself with these types of people. You want to surround yourself with, you know, people that you can't have access to Warren Buffett. You can't have access to Tim Ferriss, right? As in a personal relationship, most of us can't, but you can, you know, have a relationship with them through today's technology. And I think that's so amazing because, you know, it's like we're democratizing ideas. We're
absolutely.
And you know, we talk about, you know, however many years we dealt with trying to demonstrate that communism was wrong and it was wrong. But where it could have been right was in ideas. Ideas should be communal. And once ideas have gone communal, we're seeing such a democratization of business, such an extension of who can be an entrepreneur these days. I think that's so fascinating.
Well, that's where online communities and, you know, and mastermind groups come from. Mm-hmm. You know, the Think and Grow Rich, Napoleon Hill book, he talks about masterminds. You know, the most successful, that was one of the traits of some of the most successful people in the world, was they have their own little mastermind group. And nowadays you can formalize these mastermind groups online in such a great way that you can be interconnected with very influential, smart people from all around the world. And you've got your own little mastermind group. Because remember, you said earlier, we are the product of the five people we hang around the most. Well, if you live out in the middle of the desert in 29 Palms, there may not be really five great people to hang around with on a regular basis. But if you're a member of an online mastermind group, then you can do that. And, you know, to throw a drop a dime on myself, Chris, mm-hmm. you know, part of starting a podcast is what you're really doing is creating a community. You're collecting people and creating and generating an audience. And what my intent in the beginning was to create a mastermind group and to create an online community surrounded by a veteran on the move. And the fact is I haven't done it yet. And the reason why is for a lot of the reasons we've already talked about. I got real busy. Mm-hmm. My wife and I hit on some tough financial times there ourselves. You know, she left her corporate job and was trying to flip houses, and it just didn't go that well. Mm-hmm. We were hurting there for a while, and so I haven't had the time. You know, how often do you hear that? You know, fact is the time's there, but I haven't been able to organize it and put it together and force myself to do it. And so, I know your Facebook group has a ton of people on it, and you know, good on you. But I haven't built my online community like I wanted to, and I haven't got my mastermind group up and running like I wanted to and like my audience wants me to do. I just haven't been able to pull it off. And, you know, I'm kind of disappointed and ashamed that I haven't done it yet. But because there are a lot of military guys out there that want that stuff. They want it and they need it. And, it, you know, it's part of the networking and self-improvement. And I just haven't been able to get it together and pull it off at this point.
You know, I think, Joe, I think the thing is, though, you know, one, you're on a journey. And as with any entrepreneur out there, it's a constant journey, right? You know, it's that you're not going to end up, you're never going to say to yourself, okay, this is the end. I've made it. Here I am. Let me kick my feet up and just chill, right? You know, and that's what all of us want. But as you said before, you know, with the story about the Marines who retired 10 years after they retired, they died, you know, the end game is death. The end game is us dying, right? And so,
yeah, none of us are getting off this earth alive.
and so that's the biggest thing. But you're going to get there. And it sounds like you have something going for you with your audience. And I think that's awesome. And I'm going to put some links to your show. Any last words or pieces of advice for maybe that young PFC or that young lieutenant who's beginning their military career? What would you say to them? And what would you say to maybe that salty corporal or sergeant or that captain or major who's thinking about getting out?
Well, you know, if you think you want to do this entrepreneurial game, I highly recommend it. But like any transition, start early. The earlier you start working on it, doing your research, the better off you'll be. Mm-hmm. And the fact is, many of us, you may have to go get a job right after you get out because you might have bills and obligations you have to pay for, and that's okay. If you can jump all in, there's no better way than failing fast and failing multiple times, failing your way into this entrepreneurial game. And I would expect you need to be honest with yourself. You probably are going to fail a few times before you find success. So whoever else is along this journey with you better be prepared. You better prepare them also, whether it's your spouse and kids and that kind of thing. But and I'm one of those that I have a job on the side while I'm working my entrepreneurial thing. So at this point in my life, you know, wife, kids, the mortgage, cars, that kind of stuff. If you can reduce your debt and reduce all those obligations and distractions as much as you possibly can before you get out, you'll be much leaner, much faster, and you will have those entrepreneurial options available to you. So, you know, if you want to start, you know, listen to the Veteran on the Move podcast as a place to connect with other veterans that have gone before you that have become successful entrepreneurs, and then branch out from there. There's so many great podcasts out there and so many great books on entrepreneurship and getting into that game. So that's what I recommend. If you really think this is something you want to do, then you got to follow your dreams. You got to go for it because it'll burn inside of you for the rest of your life if you don't let it out.
Absolutely. Joe, I want to thank you so much for coming on to the Warrior Soul podcast today. And I want to give you a big Semper Fi. And I want to thank you for what you're doing to bring this knowledge to veterans across the country and around the world. And I think it's amazing that you have that purpose behind what you're doing. And it's inspiring. So thank you.
Absolutely, Chris. Semper Fi, a big hoorah to you. And look forward to talking to you here again in the near future.
Absolutely, sir. And I'll put the links to Joe's podcast in the show notes and I'm going to recommend everybody here to listen. So until next week, everybody out there in the Warrior Soul Nation, I will talk to you then.
I'm out.